warily doth follow. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about this morning as we talk about following Jesus as He is our shepherd. I didn't mean to do this when I picked this topic, but we're kind of theming our sermons. Last week, Steve gave us a great lesson on being sheep among wolves. We'll talk about that a little bit today, but I didn't know that when I picked this topic. But that's all right. Hopefully the two lessons will work with each other and help us understand each one a little better. I got the opportunity a few years back to sit in a class taught by an actual shepherd. Now, when I said this last night, someone still thought I was talking about a shepherd, an elder. No, this was a shepherd of sheep. And he was teaching about eldership from his perspective as a shepherd. And it was a great class. He spent a lot of time studying the biblical shepherds. So when in Psalm 23 and in John chapter 10, when Jesus uses this example of a shepherd, the people of the time would have known exactly what he was talking about. A little bit of that has been lost, and so I want to take some of that information from that class, put it in this lesson, and hopefully we'll get some of that meaning back, some of that better understanding of what a shepherd would look like and what a shepherd would do. But we're going to start in Psalm 23. Psalm 23 is going to lay our groundwork. We're going to start by reading the psalm. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For You are with me, Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So this psalm, this description of the shepherd, written by a shepherd, is going to lay our groundwork and kind of give us the expectations, this picture of the shepherd that these people would have had. Here David is saying, "The Lord is my shepherd. I don't need anything. He supplies my every need." The shepherd is responsible for every need of the sheep. Because sheep, left to their own devices, may find some food, may find some water, but they're going to wander off and get themselves in trouble in a hurry. And so the shepherd is responsible for safe pastures, for quiet waters, for comfort, and for protection. It can be hard to find good pastures, even in a land as fertile as the land of Palestine. In fact, we have the story in Genesis chapter 13. Abraham and Lot separate their flocks because they're just too big. There's too many sheep for the pastures, so they separate. And Lot chooses to settle by Sodom and Gomorrah because of the plentiful green pastures. Also, sheep do not like running water. So when he says in verse 2, "He leads me beside still waters," it's not only providing the needs of the sheep, but also the comfort of the sheep. Some say that it's a survival instinct. Sheep won't go near running water because they get wet, they get heavy, weighed down with wool, they'll quickly drown, they don't swim well. I don't know. But I do know that sheep don't like running water. And the trouble with that is you don't want stagnant water either because of illnesses. And so you have to find clean water that's not flowing very fast. So finding water could be difficult. Then we get to verse 3. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Sheep are very timid animals. And at the lightest breeze, at the wrong sound, they will scatter in a hurry. The shepherd would be constantly talking to, singing to, playing music for the sheep to keep them calm, to keep them focused on the shepherd. Your rod and your staff, they come for me at the end of verse 4. So the shepherds carried four weapons at all times, or maybe three weapons, depending on how you look at it. The rod, it was fairly short, thick. It was a club, basically. It was a blunt weapon used to protect the flock. They also had the staff, which you normally think of, the tall, hooked instrument used. It could retrieve a sheep that was out of reach. It could steer them back to the flock. It was a nurturing tool. Often, shepherds also carried slings. David was very familiar with a sling when he battles against Goliath. He takes a sling and five stones. That's what he was familiar with, probably from his time in the field. And they often had a dagger, a long two-edged dagger used for cutting sheep out of brush and obviously as a weapon as well. So what are these dangers then that the sheep would face? Well, obviously animals, wolves, lions, other wildcats, and different animals. Also the environment, weather, you always have to be aware of that. Lightning can take out a lot of sheep because they stay close together. Lightning, rain gets them soaked down, makes it easier for them to get sick. Also, just the environment, cliffs. Sheep have very bad close-up vision, very bad depth perception. And so it's easy for one to walk right off a cliff. The trouble is, sheep are followers. And just like lemmings jumping off of a cliff, one sheep will follow another straight off the edge of a cliff. So the shepherd has to be cognizant of the environment, what's around, to keep his sheep safe. And other obstacles as well, places where there's a lot of brush, it's easy for sheep to get caught up. And of course, other people stealing from the flock is always a concern. So before we get away from Psalm 23, away from this picture of the shepherd, I want to talk about where the sheep would sleep, their folds. Well, they would often be a three-sided stone structure up against a mountain or cave or some kind of natural boundary. And there will be a gate set into the stone wall. You could have multiple flocks inside of one fold at a time. Multiple shepherds using one fold at night. Every night the sheep and the goats would be divided. The sheep on the right, the goats on the left. And sometimes there were stalls for sick animals or for for moms getting ready to have their babies. So you can imagine this fold all mixed up. And then the shepherd. The shepherd lays in the door with some kind of wooden crossbar there, but the shepherd lays in the door, so that anything coming in or going out of the fold has to step over the shepherd. In the morning, all these sheep are mixed. The shepherds would open the gates. The sheep would just start pouring out, all mixed up. And they don't have to sort them like you'd sort cattle. The shepherds would just start walking. They would just start walking in different directions. And as they walked, they would call for their sheep. And their sheep would follow. Their sheep would follow them because they knew the voice of the shepherd. So let's go over to John chapter 10 now. John chapter 10. Jesus starts in verse 1, "Most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." Jesus uses illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. So this is a pretty generic first bit of teaching. The people would have understood this. They would have seen this every day. They would have understood that the sheep follow the shepherd and no other. And so they're baffled. They don't know what to think about it because it seems like just a statement of fact to them. Well, what's Jesus saying here? You can kind of divide this up into two sections. You have the stranger sneaks into the flock, and the sheep don't listen. So this is someone not accepted into the fold, who the gate's not open to. And the sheep don't listen to the stranger. It takes a lot of time for sheep to warm up to someone, to warm up to a new shepherd, to anyone. And so the shepherd is familiar. The stranger is not. And the sheep flee from the stranger. Whereas the shepherd is accepted into the fold, is known by those around, is known by the sheep. He enters by the gate, and the sheep know him. They hear his voice, and they follow. Because they know the shepherd, and the shepherd made himself known to the sheep. So the people are baffled. So Jesus continues by saying that he's the door, starting verse 7. "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly." We mentioned before that the shepherd lays in the door, so that anything going in or out has to cross the shepherd. That's exactly what Jesus is saying here. That all the sheep who come into the fold will find safety. And they'll go out and find pasture. But the wolf will not get into that fold. Because Jesus is there between the sheep and the wolf. And the sheep can't stray. They can't wander. Because the shepherd will stop them. Jesus says, I bring life and more abundantly. But the robbers. The word robber here, or thief, is interesting. It's kleptes, which means an embezzler or a pilferer. And according to Thayer, that word in the first century was transferred for use with false teachers. So this embezzler, pilferer, thief, false teachers stealing people away from the fold of Christ. These robbers and thieves want nothing but to steal and kill and destroy, in sharp contrast to the shepherd who gives life abundantly. Jesus is the shepherd. Continuing in verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. The wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. So there's a hierarchy in shepherding. There's the owner, the one ultimately responsible for the sheep. The sheep belong to him, and he takes all the losses when the flock is hurt. And he takes all the gain when the flock does well. Then the owner hires the shepherds. So you think about someone like Abraham, who was so blessed by God, had so many sheep, he would have had multiple shepherds. Well, the shepherd is invested in the flock as well. He may get some kind of money, but mainly his income comes from the herd as well. The shepherd gets meat, wool, the products of the sheep, but also some of the lambs. So think about Laban and Jacob. Jacob worked for Laban, and the wages of his work were the speckled, the spotted, and the brown among the sheep. And God blessed Jacob abundantly through that deal. But that was how it worked. The shepherd would gain from the flock. So again, as the flock did well, the shepherd did well. As the flock took hits, the shepherd did as well. And the shepherd was right there all the time to protect and to make sure that the flock was healthy. And then there's the hireling, the one who is there for a day. He is given a wage and works a day. So when the wolf comes, when the lion comes, there is no interest in the flock. The only interest that the hired man has is his reputation as a hired hand. And he's going to let that go if he's about to die at the hand of a wolf. So the hired man will flee. And the flock will scatter. But Jesus says, I'm the shepherd. I will lay down my life for the sheep. I will protect the flock. And the flock is mine. Again, he says, my sheep know me, and I know my sheep. So, looking at Jesus the shepherd, he brings out some characteristics of his sheep. And the first thing is the bond with the sheep. So, I did a little research on this, and the short of it is it takes a lot of time and patience and gentleness, but leadership to make sheep trust. So you can imagine the handover process from one shepherd to the next. You have them both working together. The new shepherd is spending time, again, talking, singing, playing music for the sheep so that they become familiar. And eventually they become as familiar with the new shepherd as with the old. And the old can leave the flock. Before sheep can know the shepherd has to make himself known to the sheep. Jesus has done that. He has made himself known to us through his word, through the words of his apostles, through his teachings and his actions. Jesus has made himself very clearly known to us. Now, it's the job of us as the sheep to know our shepherd. We'll know his voice and we'll follow him. Go to Matthew chapter 22 with me. Matthew 22, just a couple of verses here. Jesus is asked by a lawyer, what is the first and great command? And Jesus says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets. Now go over to 1 John with me. 1 John chapter 4. Starting in verse 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this the love of God was manifested toward us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through him. And this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. God loved us first. He initiated that relationship, not with words, with an action. He sent his Son. Back up into chapter 3, starting in verse 16, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. We also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Again, Jesus took the first step. He laid down his life for the sheep. So we don't establish that connection. That's already been done. All we do is obey and follow. The love we show is an active faith. The sheep know the voice of the shepherd, going back to John chapter 10. Again, this is because the shepherd makes himself known to the sheep. They know the voice of the shepherd. We know the voice of Christ when we hear it spoken from the pulpit. When we know Christ, we hear him speak through his word that's spoken by others. And by the same thought, we know what's not of the shepherd. We're familiar with the shepherd. We don't know the strangers. We should be fleeing from the strangers, or in this case, the false teachers. We have a tendency to hear about a doctrine and want to learn just a little bit more about it in the name of wanting to know how to refute it, how to combat it. But every time we learn a little more about a doctrine, we're putting it a little more in our minds and becoming a little more familiar with it. We're becoming more familiar with another shepherd, someone else who we may follow. The sheep know the shepherd. It says in Hebrews 5 that Christ learned obedience through the things which he suffered. Christ learned obedience as a son when he obeyed. Obedience taught him obedience. We learn how to obey as we obey. We learn better how to obey. We learn better why we need to obey as we do so. And the sheep follow the shepherd. We know the voice of the shepherd. We know the shepherd. And we follow the shepherd. And don't fool yourself into thinking, I don't have to follow anyone. I don't have to follow a shepherd. I don't have to follow anyone. Because in Matthew 6, we learn, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. There's two choices. God or Satan in this world. There are two masters, two shepherds. Jesus is telling us, I'm the good shepherd. And he tells us in verse 17 of John chapter 10. Therefore, my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment I have received from my Father. Christ is saying, I lay down my life for the sheep. And he did. And he rose again, taking back life. So Jesus is our good shepherd. He is the loving shepherd of whose flock we can be a part. And anyone can be a part of it if we seek to do the will of Christ. As we talked about last week, we're sheep among wolves. And at times, that is very difficult. Through various oppressions, ridicule, things we face. Other places, in some ways, much more than here. But even here, we should be facing ridicule. Because there's always people who are going to disagree. And especially in an age where my opinion is the only one that matters. In an age where any opinion except mine is offensive. We hear about it when we profess our faith. So if we're not hearing about it, maybe we're not out professing our faith enough. Christ will protect us. He is our shepherd. He will take care of us. Let's be out professing Him, professing His name. So maybe this morning you've wandered from the fold. Maybe you're the lost sheep from Luke chapter 15. The shepherd left the 99 to find the one and bring him back. The shepherd's waiting for you this morning. He wants you to return. He's searching for you through his word, through those professing his word. If you'll come home, do so now as we stand and sing.